Any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner and an accredited estate planner as well, I should mention from time to time, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, although we are updating the website, so that's kind of a work in progress right now. And we want to remind you that you can listen each and every week at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And that is particularly helpful for people who are outside our listening area. And if you want to suggest to any friends listening to the show, this is one way you can get access to that if you are not from our area. Today is September 12th, 2012. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 13,333, the NASDAQ at 3114, and the S&P closed at 1436. Last week, we discussed labor. Labor as in what do you get for your labor, wages as a self-employed person or independent contractor. What are the differences? How are they treated? And are there any fringe benefits? This week, what is my topic? My topic is takeaway topics. What's that? I want to try to highlight some of the best takeaways from the topics from a number of the shows over the past year, this being 2012. Not all the shows, because a lot of the shows during tax season talk about taxes, and I'm always happy to talk about taxes. If anybody has questions, we're always happy to talk about that. But I'm kind of highlighting more the shows where it's been topics other than that, because it's just a little bit more defined. Taxes is a very broad subject, and happy to talk about that. But we're going to look at some of the takeaways from the shows, the ones that kind of stood out for me. It's not necessarily the ones that might have, you know, stood out for each and every one of you, because then it would be like doing a whole show on each of those topics again. I tried to just kind of glance through the issues I had on those shows and tried to kind of think, what did I think was important that people take away? So we're going to go over some of those tonight. We are live. We are here to take your questions. Andrea is in the studio with us tonight, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics, not specific investments. So if you have questions tonight, it's a great night to call. I'm happy to have those. It is a gorgeous night, so I don't blame you if you don't, but it really is such a beautiful night. You can kick back, sit outside, turn on the radio, listen to the show, have your remote phone or your cell phone, give us a call. The number to call in this evening is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So tonight's topic again, topic takeaways. So some of the topics that in particular kind of stuck out to me as I was going through my list of topics for the past several months, I had a show on, I had actually a couple shows on education planning and the FAFSA. So I want to highlight a couple issues from there. Nuts and bolts of retirement planning, Social Security, getting older and living and managing independently, estate planning, biggest choices in your financial life, how to pass assets to your heirs, planning in divorce, children's responsibility for parents' nursing care, the Medicare surtax, and those are the topics. But I also wanted to finish up a little bit from my topic last week, which was labor. So I'm going to start with that topic, and then I'm going to go to the top of the list where we first started talking about education planning back in January of 2012. So I pulled different shows, January, February, April, May, have some in June, and then one in August. The more recent shows I didn't tend to look at as much because we've just been covered those so recently. So if you have questions basically about any topic tonight in your financial life, you're welcome to give us a call, 610-758-8810. So last week we talked about labor, and a couple questions had come up that I wanted to kind of go over a little bit. We had discussed labor, you know, pay, minimum wage, overtime, the rules for overtime, fringe benefits, and what kinds of benefits were taxed. And some fringe benefits are not subject to tax. Some fringe benefits might not be taxable for federal, but they'll be taxable for state and local. So you need to understand the kinds of fringe benefits that you're eligible for. We talked about retirement plans and the differences between an employee and an independent contractor. I didn't talk as much about that as I had intended to, so I'll see if I can cover a couple little points about that. But one of the other loose ends that I had was someone had called in and asked about overtime. We were talking about overtime, and there's a difference between an exempt employee and a non-exempt employee. And an exempt employee was someone that the employer has defined, I guess, as someone who doesn't qualify for overtime rate pay. And they are exempt from that because maybe they might have managerial decision making, they might have professional designations like a CPA, wouldn't have to be entitled to overtime pay. There are some other rules and regulations around that, certain amount of, in order to be exempt, there's certain maybe job criteria, but there are also certain pay criteria, which is very low, by the way. So there could be a large population in the workforce that is exempt. But for those people who are non-exempt, who are entitled to overtime pay, if you work more than 40 hours in a week, you're entitled to time and a half. Now, someone had called in and asked, well, what about comp time? Could I have comp time in lieu of the overtime pay? Personally, I said, that's what I would like. I love having time off, but and it would be worth it. But when we kind of looked at the rules, it doesn't appear that that is something that an employee can negotiate even with their employer, except there are certain exceptions to that, which would be what I had found out would be certain governmental and entities may allow that. So basically, exempt employees do not have to be paid overtime. So non-exempt employees do have to be paid time and a half. It looks like private employers cannot negotiate that, but government entities may. And in some circumstances, they could allow comp time in lieu of overtime pay. But if they don't take their comp time within a certain period of time, even in those government entities, then they must pay the employee the overtime rate. Okay, so when the caller had called and asked that question, I had no idea and don't know if he might be a governmental employee, because it was a great question. I really liked it, and it was, I love when I have to look something up. So it was a great question, and maybe it came from, you know, his own job, and if he was a governmental employee, that's why something like that might have been offered to him, and why it would have stuck out, as I had just said, you know, employees and employers can't negotiate that overtime. But if you work for some governmental entity, that may be an option for you. If you don't take the comp time in lieu of the overtime pay timely, then the government entity would still have to pay you the overtime rate. Okay, so I hope I cleared that up a little bit, but otherwise it does not look negotiable. Employee versus independent contractor. Let me hit on that for a moment. I'm not sure if I gave that enough attention. An employee is someone who's working for an employer, and the employer is really controlling the work that you're doing. They're controlling your work somehow in the hours kept, the office, the tools you're using, and directing your work in such a way that you are an employee. And as an employee, they pay half your Social Security, you pay half your Social Security, and then they also withhold your federal wages, state wages, local wages, you know, and may also offer certain fringe benefits, health benefits, things like that. That's an employee-employer relationship. An independent contractor is someone who's maybe brought in on an hourly basis, asked to do a certain amount of work, but you really are directing your day, you know, the efforts that you're putting through. The employer is not telling you exactly what to do. They're just consulting with you. So in that situation, you're responsible for paying your own taxes, payroll taxes. You're paying your own Social Security tax, your own federal tax, state tax, local tax. And because you're not having it withheld from your pay, you're going to be doing it through estimated tax payments, basically. Okay? So there are a few more differences in that, but that's kind of basically. And when we come back from the break, I'll tell you a little bit more about independent contractors. But we have to take a break right now. Phone number 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Ever wonder what it would be like to sit down and chat with Terry Gross? Well, here's your chance. WDIY is hosting a special meet-and-greet champagne reception with Terry on Saturday, October 27th from 5 to 6 p.m. at Blue Event Center in Bethlehem. Terry will be there to sign autographs, take photos, and chat a bit with each of the attendees. Tickets are very limited, so reserve yours today. $50 per person includes hors d'oeuvres and champagne. Call or email the station to reserve your spot. More information online at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show, folks. If Bill is listening, I think I'll take two tickets to see Terry Gross. So put me on the list, somebody, and then I'll write a check. Sounds like a great opportunity. I have to check if we're around, but I think I could still take two tickets. So welcome back to the show, folks. This is Your Financial Choices. I hope that you, despite the nice weather, have the opportunity to sit and listen in. We are talking tonight about some of the topics that I've done in 2012. And I went back and looked at the shows and tried to take the best takeaways from each of those shows. Well, I should be careful of that, because the best takeaways might be something that would actually apply to you, the listener, in your moment, because everyone has different situations. But it's what stuck out to me as something that you needed to kind of pay attention to, or that I just thought was interesting and applicable to a number of people. So that's kind of the criteria I used when I was looking for something that stuck out on each of these shows. So if you have questions this evening, because we are talking about such an array of topics, I welcome you to call in, and you can call in and we can talk live. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Andrea. She'll write it down and she'll bring it into me, and then I'll answer it in due course. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. And I already feel like the show's going really, really fast. My whole day went really, really fast today. So if you do have a question, I wouldn't wait to call in, just because it's going to go by very quickly. So the topics I have mentioned, a number of things, from retirement planning, Social Security, estate planning, passing assets to your heirs, divorce. We're going to go over some of these things, Medicare surtax. I'm going to try to hit a takeaway for each of these. As far as independent contractor employee, let me wrap this up. I talked about the difference in taxes. So one of the things that an independent contractor has to be aware of is when you go to work for someone and they're trying to talk you into being an independent contractor, they say, oh, I can't hire you as an employee. You know, I have to hire you as an independent contractor, and I'm going to pay you on a 1099-R instead of a W-2. You know, there should be some flags that go up. If you really are an employee, that employer really needs to hire you as an employee, because otherwise the burden of all those taxes, especially the Social Security tax, which in 2013 is going to be back at 7.65%, that's your burden and your responsibility of paying those taxes. So you want to make sure you have your job clearly defined. If you are an independent contractor, fine. Then you need to be aware of what that means to you. You're going to file a Schedule C, self-employed, sole proprietor, unless you set up business some other way, like a partnership or an S-corp or something. The simplest form of business would be the Schedule C, sole proprietor. You report that with your 1040, your tax return. But what you want to make sure you're keeping track of then, if you are in business for yourself, in these circumstances. You want to keep track of your mileage. You want to keep track of if you're using a cell phone and calls that you're making. If you're taking people out to dinner and it's business meetings, you need to make sure you're writing down the purpose of the business meeting. Who's attending the business meeting? What did you discuss? Keep track of all your receipts. Find a system. Organize yourself. You don't want to have little pieces of paper when you go in to see your accountant. You want to be organized and have as much of the information that's needed for that Schedule C already defined when you start going into appointments and making sure that you account for everything. If you end up having an office in your home, you also want to look at that. Is that the only place you have, you know, for your business? How much space are you using in your home? Is it dedicated space? You need to know the square footage of that space that you're using. You need to know the square footage of your whole house so that you can allocate expenses relating to your home to that home office, and that could give you some extra deductions on your tax return. So you want to be aware of all the deductions that you would be entitled to if you are indeed self-employed. Now, if you're an independent contractor and you're doing consulting and you're going to the employer's the person who's hired you, place of business all the time, then you may not have an office in your home. So you want to be careful about the deductions you're going to take because they could be red flags to the IRS if you're being too aggressive in your business expenses. Okay? So that was that topic, labor, last week, and I actually quite enjoyed that. I learned some things there. One of the other topics we talked about was education planning and FAFSA. I talked about that early in January, and again, I touched on it a bit in August, and I think it bears repeating because applying for financial aid for your students isn't something that should be just done one day of the year. When you're doing applying for financial aid, you need to plan for it in as much advance as you can. So you want to, just like any other financial planning, you want to kind of position yourself in the best measure that you can to increase your chances for qualifying for financial aid for your student. So you want to start early and plan ahead. If you have cash and investments, but you're carrying consumer debt, such as credit cards, you want to consider paying off those credit cards because consumer credit does not factor into your financial aid calculations, but that money in your bank account does. So if you have, you know, $60,000 in your bank account and you have $10,000 on your credit card, your financial aid calculation would look better if you had no credit card and $10,000 less in your bank account. Okay, you also want to make sure that you have enough, you know, emergency cash reserves and things like that, but you shouldn't have credit card debt anyway. Also, you might want to accelerate other expenses that you've been considering, such as purchasing a computer for your student, the refrigerator, the furniture for the student, you even purchases that you plan on doing in your home. What happens when you go to fill out the financial aid application, it is going to look at the assets that you have at that moment. Now, the other thing that's going to happen is in January, when you go to fill out the financial aid application, it's also going to ask for your tax return for 2012. Okay, so why am I mentioning this now? We're in September. If in 2012, you have wages and you have a 401k available and you're not contributing to that 401k, and maybe your wages are like $90,000, $80,000, $70,000, something like that. I mean, if you're talking about $500,000, you're not going to get financial aid anyway. But if you're someone who's kind of like on the edge, you want to think about putting money into your 401k to reduce your wages on page one in 2012. So if you haven't been doing that, you might want to see if you can still do it and shelter a little bit more of that. All right. There's lots of calculators on the internet to check this out. If you're one of those people that could be kind of like it could make a difference for you, and if you can afford to do it, because if you put money into your 401k, you're also going to have a smaller paycheck, right? So if you can afford to do it, then you might want to think about doing it if it's going to make you eligible for additional financial aid. You could also consider paying off or paying down your mortgage. Again, that's if you have, you know, the assets to do so. So you want to reduce some of the free cash available, and by doing that and coordinating that with your own tax return, you could increase some of your chances. So plan ahead, and filling out those financial aid applications is going to come along much sooner than you realize. So start getting ready for that. Jeff, do we take another break?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, folks, we are going to take another break. I feel like I'm all by myself out here. So if you guys have questions, I would love a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 79 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, some fog, lows around 50. Thursday, sunny skies, highs around 81. Friday, slight chance of showers, highs around 80. Saturday and Sunday, mostly sunny skies with high temperatures around 75 degrees. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking about topic takeaways from past shows. We had a show in February where we talked about the nuts and bolts of retirement planning and the five key risks that are likely to affect your retirement savings. And what they are asset allocation, withdrawal rate, longevity, health care costs, and inflation. So, five risks that will affect your retirement savings. Asset allocation, that's looking at your portfolios to see how you're invested. And do you have all your money in cash? Do you have all your money in bonds? Do you have all your money in stock? Do you have all your money in small caps? Asset allocation is how you have your money invested. Withdrawal rate, so in retirement, how much money do you expect to take out of your investments? Other risk, longevity, how long are you going to live? Someone who's going to live to, you know, who retires at 62 and dies at 65, you know, and that's how it runs in the family. Well, you might not think you have that long to live, and maybe you're going to spend all your money. But if you're going to live till 95, then your retirement planning is certainly going to have to consider your longevity and how long the money that you have today when you retire is going to last, and is it going to last till you live till age 90? Healthcare cost. Also, healthcare costs, very expensive, but the longer you live, the longer you're going to be paying those. And if you're living on a fixed income, like Social Security or a pension, your healthcare costs may rise more than that fixed income that you have coming in, which then brings us to the fifth risk, which is inflation, the idea that costs could be rising. So part of the nuts and bolts of retirement planning that we talked about with these five risks were that there are you can control some of these risks, and then there's some that you can't. So of the risk that you can control, you want to make sure that you're paying attention to them to hopefully raise your odds of having your assets last a little bit longer. And the factors that you can control, the risk that you can control, are asset allocation and your withdrawal rate. So while we can't predict market performance when we talk about asset allocation, by trying to diversify your portfolio, you hope that you reduce some of the volatility while still producing returns that are in line with your risk tolerance. But if you set up a diversified portfolio and never look at it again, over time, as different asset classes perform in the market, your diversification could get skewed. So you want to make sure that you go back and look at how you have allocated your portfolio. And This is also a nice reminder at this time to tell people who've been so nervous about the markets and the volatility. If you went into cash, you know, 3 years ago when you got so nervous and you never have gone out of cash, you have to revisit and say, does this really make sense anymore? Did I miss the upswing in the market? Think about where we were in 2009 and you still were nervous. We have to really learn to control our behavior when we're looking at the market, because we sometimes get panicked when things are the worst and we take out our investments and go into cash and we don't feel good again until it's really great, 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 great. And then you get in when it's all great and maybe that's the next dip. So you just really have to kind of control your emotions and know what risk you're willing to take and what you can tolerate, but then stick to that allocation and diversify and rebalance and all of that. The other item I mentioned, key factor that you can control, is your withdrawal rate, how you withdraw your money from your savings. Now, one of the things that you need to pay attention to here is just because the markets are doing great, 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 and you know your returns are higher and you say, oh gosh, I had set my portfolio up to take like a 4% withdrawal, and I know that a 4% draw, you know, in your case, I'm just making these numbers up, you know, will see me through my retirement. And then when the market starts doing great, you say, hey, I'm going to start taking some extra money out because everything's going really well. I was too conservative with my 4%. Now I'm going to go with 6% or 7%. One of the things you need to do is also retain your discipline and make sure that you, whether that's really going to work in the long term or not, because you got to remember there's times when the market will perform and have 6% returns. There's times in the market when you might have 2% returns. That 4% that you might have set up might be some kind of average. So you got to be careful in your, you know, perceptions and how you're reacting to what the market's doing as to your ability to take out, take out, take out. Now, the other thing is there might be times where you seem to just keep accumulating money that maybe the withdrawal that you set up was more than you needed. It doesn't mean you need to go out and spend frivolously just to spend the money that you took out. Maybe you just need to reinvest, do some gifting, do some extra charitable giving. So you want to make sure that you control and are disciplined with your withdrawal rate as well. So of the five key risks in retirement, the asset allocation, withdrawal rate, longevity, healthcare cost, and inflation. The two that you have probably the most control over are your asset allocation and withdrawal rate. And so empower yourself and make sure you're at least watching those and taking care of those as well. All right. In April, we had a show on Social Security. We had Mark Basic come in, and Mark is going to come back with us on November 14th. He has lots of good things to talk about. And there is the online calculator now that you can set up an account online with Social Security. That's at ssa.gov, Social Security Administration, ssa.gov. You can set up an account online where you actually can go in and enter your information and get your statement of your Social Security benefits, the illustration of what your benefits are, right online. Remember years ago, we would get that statement like 3 months before our birthday, and then they kind of stopped sending the statements. I don't think they started sending those again. I think you have to go online to get them, and we're going to try to bring awareness to that. And then there's some other information that Mark has for us, and he'll be here November 14th to talk about that. One of the questions we always get when we think of Social Security is, what is the best age to start receiving benefits? And we hear that all the time. And I think for years, the assumption people would say, oh, if I'm retired at 62, I start my benefits at 62. But there's been a movement towards people reevaluating that. And so we're going to talk about that in just a minute when we come back from the break. Folks, would love to have any calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, and would love to add your questions to my pile of questions. back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about topic takeaways tonight. If you have questions, give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air or give your question to Andrea, and she'll bring it in to me, and I'll do the best I can to answer it. Some of the topics, you know, I have to stop and think about this show. I love doing this show. I love talking about your financial choices. I love educating people. And I can say I'm proud of the topics that we've had. I've been doing this, I guess, almost 5 years. I'm really proud of the topics that we have each week. And, you know, it's an effort on my part to try to think of topics that will be interesting, that people will be able to get something out of. And I certainly hope that the community does learn something from this each week and are able to apply it in their life. But I look at the array of topics, and I didn't even talk about all the different income tax topics we have during tax season, just lots and lots of them. But when I look, we've talked about education planning, retirement planning, Social Security, long-term care, estate planning, using trust, divorces, Medicare surtax. There's just so many different things that we've talked about. And to me, it's kind of exciting. I love learning. That's part of why I like doing this. I love learning and I love teaching. So I thank WDIY for having this opportunity for me to host this show. I appreciate it and hope you all do too. So if you have questions about anything related to your financial life, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Now, in April, I had mentioned we had a show on Social Security with Mark Basak. Love Mark. He just has a ton of information, and it's all up in his head. It's amazing what he knows. And he'll be with us November 14th to talk about items of interest to us about Social Security. But again, one of the main takeaways that came from that show in April is the ever-asked question of, when should I start taking Social Security? So basically what Mark had responded with was that there is no best age for everyone, and ultimately it is your choice. So what I would suggest is the best thing you can do is sit down and talk about what your own situation is. You just got to get away from talking to other people sometimes when you're trying to make this decision for yourself. For example, my mother, that's all she has is Social Security. For her, my father died and, had a stroke and different things like that. So their life was affected by that. And they were self-employed, had their own store. They thought that was going to be their retirement. Well, all of a sudden, my father had a stroke that affected the value of the business, the ongoing concern of the business, and things like that. So my mother lives on Social Security, basically. And so when someone would pose the question, now my mother worked for a long time too, and at such time she was able to collect Social Security. If someone posed the question to her, you know, you're not working, do you need to collect Social Security now? It was a resounding yes, because that's all she had. So you have to understand that those are people's situations sometimes. And when you're talking to your friends and making judgments and comments and recommendations, they may not disclose everything to you. And you don't always have to disclose everything to your friends and neighbors. It's a personal decision, a personal choice. But you do need to be armed in the facts and circumstances when you're making that decision. What you do need to be, one of the best takeaways I think you have to be aware of is, when you're making that decision, if you collect early, you have elected to have a permanently reduced benefit. So if your full retirement age is 66 and you retire at 62 and you say, I'm going to take my Social Security now, you have elected to have a permanently reduced benefit, such that if you live to age 80, a long, long time, there's all kinds of calculations that can be done to figure out a break even. You may not, over your lifetime, collect as much from Social Security as you would have by waiting. So if someone's retired, should they wait or should they not? You have to look at longevity, how long you're going to live. You have to look if you're married and you have a spouse who also can collect, such that maybe you could collect on your spouse's record. But the only way you can collect on their spouse's record is if you wait till full retirement age. So collecting early, permanently reduced benefit. If you're able to collect on a spouse to give yourself the most options, you may need to wait till you're fully retired if you can afford to. So longevity in my family, if I think I'm going to live till 90, then I may not want to collect at 62. Because over my lifetime, I would collect a much higher benefit by just waiting till full retirement age. So if I stop working at 62, it doesn't mean I have to go collect Social Security. If I have other means, other investments, my retirement accounts, I could live off of those until I reach full retirement age, and then I could start collecting and I would collect a higher benefit. Okay? So the takeaway on Social Security, everyone's situation is different. You got to make sure you understand all that goes into these decisions and kind of run some numbers. Maybe that would help you. April 11th, we had a show talking about getting older and living and managing independently. So why I had this show is sometimes what happens is people are getting older, they still want to live independently, they don't want to rely on their kids, and sometimes they don't even want their kids to know that they're starting to forget things, or they couldn't balance their checkbook. This is a really big thing I've noticed in older people. They start, you know, kind of struggling with balancing the checkbook, which is a struggle for people anyway, I think. And then you get older, and then you start thinking it's because you're older. No, it might just be because it's hard to balance your checkbook. But anyway, a lot of times these older people don't like their kids to know, so they don't say anything, and then the checkbook just continues to be out of balance, and that's where you can start running into problems. So maybe you could consider having someone like a daily money manager. So we had Betty Adam on, and we talked about not giving up your independence. And you just get the assistance of someone who will help you go through your bills, help you write the checks, not sign the checks, help you write the checks, help you organize, file, balance your checkbook, keep track of your expenses. It comes to be tax time. They'll print off a list of all your medical deductions, your charitable deductions. So I thought that was important and worth mentioning again. A daily money manager could really help a family member who's elderly, who wants to maintain their independence. It also is a great alternative for families where the children live out of town and it would require them driving in, you know, hours or flying in hours. It's kind of nice to have that connection with someone local who you know is taking care of mom or dad and their daily finances. And as a family, you can all agree that you can share that information, and then the daily money manager could actually keep the kids involved as well. So that's something to think about. We had a call come in from John in Easton off air, and his question is, he's 63, unemployed, had to collect Social Security, cannot find a job even though he's been qualified and has interviewed. And can I discuss the possible age discrimination and difficulty finding a job at this age? He's in the manufacturing industry, which of course has been bad. And he said, if he does find a job, should I stop Social Security? John, good call, good question. Here's the problem, John. Once you start collecting Social Security, you can't stop it. So there is one thing that might throw people off. Well, two things. One, there is something called file and suspend. That's really only available to, let's say, a worker who has a spouse who is eligible to collect, and the worker is full retirement age. If the worker is full retirement age, they can file and suspend, and that way their spouse can collect on the worker's record. So that could sometimes confuse people because they hear file and suspend. They might think they can file and then they can stop it. That's one thing. The second thing is years ago, people could file, collect, then change their mind, stop collecting, but then they would have to pay back the Social Security that they collected. So, John, in your case, let's say you started collecting for 6 months and then you went back to work. You can't now stop. In the past, you could stop collecting Social Security. You'd have to pay back the 6 months' worth of Social Security. Now you can't do that, so you cannot now stop. What could happen, John, though, is if you went to work full-time, and let's pretend you started making $80,000. That's way over the limit that Social Security allows you to make and continue to collect. So what would end up happening, the Social Security says it's about $14,000 that you can earn and collect Social Security. If you earn more than that and you're under full retirement age, which I'm guessing you are at 63, if you're under full retirement age, you have to pay back every dollar you have to pay back a dollar for every $2 over the $14,000. So in my case, I said you made, let's say, $50,000, then you're over by 36, divide by 2. What is that, Jeff? $18,000. You would have to, then you couldn't earn the Social Security in that case. So in that situation, it's almost like you did stop. But you stopped not because it was your choice. You stopped because you made so much more money over the threshold of Social Security. So that really would be the only way to kind of stop it. Now, and then what happens, John, is you actually then start building up your Social Security record again. So then at such time, you are eligible to collect again once you earn less than that threshold how that gets calculated out, then you actually might have a higher benefit. As far as the discrimination, other than just, my observation of that, I can't comment because I haven't studied it. I think it is something that's probably out there. People have sued for age discrimination. It's sometimes hard to prove, especially if you're in the manufacturing industry, and it's just the nature of that industry that people are laid off or let go or you don't have jobs and it's hard to find a job. It could just be that the jobs aren't there. It could be that they realized a more experienced person might cost more money, and so maybe they do look to hire younger people. I don't know how discrimination comes into that when someone is hiring. That would be much more difficult to prove than when they're firing. So what I would suggest, John, is look away from the manufacturing industry. I think retail is a great place to work. I worked retail for years. I loved retail. And Jeff has worked retail. Andrea might have worked retail. I think that retail could be a great place. And so someone might say, yeah, but there really aren't any retail jobs right now either. But there is such a mix of industries out there. You're looking at fast food restaurants. You could look at gas stations. You could look at the convenience stores. One of my favorite places, Wawa. You could look at those kind of places. Places that have 24-hour, if they're open 24 hours, I imagine it would be difficult to fill some of those night shifts and things like that, where young people maybe could get after school hours. They might need older people to come in and work later at night, overnight, stocking shelves, early morning. So I would say open up your world to exploring other job opportunities than just manufacturing. Now you might say, but I'm not going to make as much money. But John, if you're already getting Social Security, and let's say your Social Security is, $12,000 a year, $1,000 a month, you can go get another job and make $14,000 part-time. And that together could end up being what you would have been making, you know, in your prior job. So try to keep that in mind. I hope that helps. Folks, we are going to take a break. Thank you, John, though, for calling. I love my calls. If you guys have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We got 15 minutes left when we come back from the break. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Welcome back to the show, folks. If you have questions, you only have 15 minutes left to call, maybe 14 minutes. The phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or off air, whatever is more comfortable for you, but we are live, and I love calls. I love questions. The topic tonight is topic takeaways. Some of the topics I've had over the year, over the past year, just since January, and a few of the takeaways I thought it would be worthwhile kind of hitting on, and you could jot these things down. Estate planning, I had in May. I had Judy Harris come on. I've had many attorneys on in the show in the past, and that's because, well, number one, I like attorneys, and number two, I think estate planning is so, so important, and I think so many people are afraid of it, and I really want to dispel the fears involved with estate planning. It's so empowering to feel like you've accomplished it, and you've taken care of business, and you have nothing to worry about, and it adds to your longevity. Because you've taken the stress out of your life by actually facing these things you fear. So some of the attorneys we've had on, Judy Harris, Anthony Rahuba, Eric Strauss, Dennis Pappas. I appreciate all those people who give their time to come on the show and share what they know and provide the education to the audience. So one of the things that comes out from every show that I have, where I have them come on, estate attorneys come on, is that you have to have your basic estate planning documents. We talk about having a will. We talk about having a power of attorney, a health directive, trust if you need it. Not everybody needs a trust. Your friends are telling you you have to have a trust. You might not have to have a trust. It depends. Depends on your situation. You kind of got to go through your own circumstances. So basic documents, very, very important. If you don't have them, please check into that. Other items with estate planning. If you have amassed a certain amount of wealth that you don't think you're ever going to spend in your lifetime and you don't need it, think about gifting and the benefits of gifting, beneficiary designations, things like that. We did have a show in May, so I'll segue into that, where we talked about how to pass assets to your heirs. Couple things to know. Annual exemption, folks. You can gift $13,000 a year to any one individual. It doesn't have to be your child. It doesn't have to be your parent. It could be anybody. It could be your friend. $13,000 a year to any individual. And when we talk about that annual exemption, all we're really referring to is that you don't have to file a federal gift tax return in order to give that amount of money away, or that amount of stock, that amount of property. The fair market value is $13,000. It doesn't have to be cash. You could give away stock. You could give away a percent in a partnership or a corporation, stock, whatever. So there's an annual exemption. You don't have to file a gift tax return. You want to be aware of the consequences of your gift, though, and your beneficiary, the donee that you have given the gift to, needs to know if there's cost basis in that. It's easy if it's cash. You give away $13,000, they get $13,000. There's no income tax consequence on that. they put the $13,000 in the bank. If it earns $100 of interest, of course, they have to pay income tax on that $100, but there's no income tax consequence on that gift. If you give them $13,000 fair market value of stock and it cost you only $1,000, you need to let them know that, because if they go to sell the stock, they need to know that the cost basis is $1,000. When you give someone something, they also inherit your holding period and your cost basis. Another way to pass assets to heirs, let me just say one other thing. If it's over $13,000, then you file a gift tax return. It still does not mean that you have to pay gift tax. You have to file the gift tax return if it's over $13,000, and then you have an exemption, a gift tax exemption. Right now in 2012, that gift tax exemption is $5.12 million. It's tied to the federal estate tax exemption. So there's some reporting that you have to do for that. And then when you die, you know, your executor has to know what transfers you had during your lifetime that exceeded the annual exemption. And they know that by looking at your gift tax return. The IRS knows by looking at your gift tax return. So annual exemptions, it's really powerful. You can give away a lot of money out of your estate and protect it from inheritance taxes and estate taxes, if applicable, by doing those annual exemptions. If you're married, you can join in those gifts with your spouse. And it's called gift splitting. And you could do $26,000. So I could do $26,000 to my daughter. I'm doing $13,000. And my husband could join in that and do $13,000 as well. Even if it's from my account, we elect to split that gift and use our annual exemptions together. Okay? You can also put money into 529 accounts for grandkids, things like that. One way to avoid the annual exemption but still gift is to make payments directly to college education, you know, college institutions. So if you're someone who has so much money that you use your annual exemption, and you have even more money you'd like to give away if you could, and you have grandkids who are in college, you could actually make a payment directly to the university, and then it isn't part of your annual exemption or gifting. So keep that in mind as well. You could pass assets to your heirs through titling. You can do joint ownership with rights of survivorship. You could do tenancy by the entireties is a joint property between spouses. There's certain protections for that. So between spouses, it's called tenancy by the entireties. Joint tenancy, though, you can have with, you know, your siblings, your parents, your kids. Just be aware of the consequences of that titling as well. You want to make sure you have your beneficiary designations properly made, primary beneficiary designations, contingent beneficiary designations. If you're giving money away to charity, you might want to consider whether you want to make the charity the beneficiary of an IRA rather than giving them like $10,000 in your will or $100,000 in your will. Rather than give them cash outright like that, make them a beneficiary on your taxable account, your IRA, and then you would save your other heirs income tax on that type of transfer. There's lots and lots of stuff in estate planning. So those are just some of the highlights. Make sure your life insurance beneficiary designations are up to date too, including contingent beneficiary. If you and your spouse or you and your son, if they're your primary beneficiary, are travel a lot together and something happens to both of you, you always want to have a backup. I always say have a backup so you never have to use it. Biggest choices in your financial life, talked about that in May. What I wanted to emphasize there, folks, was some of the biggest choices in your financial life involve your attitude toward your financial choices, how you empower yourself in your decisions, how you empower yourself in how you face, you know, your own financial realities. You know, I try to dissuade people from doom and gloom, try to empower yourself with making good decisions. So if you say, oh, I don't have any money. Well, then save money, you know, try to save it. And if it's hard to do that, then, you know, go a different direction. Try to think outside the box. Try to have a new attitude about your financial life and see if that makes a difference. Try it for a while. And I don't mean to sound, you know, naive about this. I just had this conversation with someone today. I know that people have trials and tribulations. But you still, I think it's much better to just try to be as positive as you possibly can in all facets of your life. I have my down days too, don't get me wrong, but you just got to always keep getting back up, watch your attitude, and that could affect your choices more than anything. Be positive. People react to confidence as well. Back to John, who called earlier, if he's still listening, you know, sometimes what happens too, when you go into job interviews, and I'm not saying this is your case, John, but if you go into an interview confident, passionate, they see it in your eyes, you feel good, you look good, sometimes people react to that. And if you're making them feel good, then sometimes they're more inclined to maybe say, oh, this could be a good person, good attitude, you know, embrace life, lots of good energy. It just makes a difference. So in your financial life, one of the biggest, you know, choices you have, one of the biggest choices in your financial life is your attitude. May 30th, no, I already talked about passing assets to your heirs. In June 13th, we had planning and divorce with attorney Lauren Sorrentino from Norris McLaughlin, and I just forgot their third name because they changed their name. Used to be Tallman Hutters. Anyway, Lauren Sorrentino was probably one of my favorite guests I've had. She was just great on the radio, great with her information, wonderful educator. And one of the takeaways I wanted to make sure that people know is if you're going into a marriage that might be a little iffy to begin with, or you are likely to inherit large amounts of money and maybe your spouse is, you know, came into the marriage impoverished or something, you want to make sure naturally that you have trust in your own marriage, but you also want to be kind of smart about what you're doing. First, be aware that every state has different laws as far as divorce. So depending on where you live, when you divorce could have an impact on how your assets get split if you ended up being divorced. And if you inherited some asset from a parent or some large dollar amount from a parent, if something is sacred to you, then even if you're in a good marriage, maybe you want to keep that separate for reasons, you know, yet to be determined. So it might make sense maybe to put it into a trust if that's going to work for you. You know, if you have children, you want to protect it. One of the cautions I have for people when they're marrying is if you have children and you die and you're the one who made all the money, if your surviving spouse is going to come into your fortune and you have children, what is difficult to protect are your assets from that second spouse that your spouse may marry. Okay, so if I'm married and let's pretend I have $1 million and I have three children and I leave everything to my husband, if I die, I don't know what's going to happen. Is he going to remarry? And if he, and I want him to, but if he remarries, is that $1 million that I had going to be protected for my three children, or is his second spouse going to take it all? So you just want to be careful when you're coming into assets. If it's kind of even all the time and you don't have too much wealth, maybe it doesn't matter. But if you are someone who's in a position to inherit something and it would be a little bit lopsided in that marriage, just be aware of that if you're kind of, you know, not in a good place maybe with your spouse or you haven't trusted them in the past. Just be careful of that. Medicare surtax, big thing. I'm going to have like a little newsletter on that. If anybody wants it, eventually I'll try to make sure I get that information out. But the Medicare surtax isn't as scary as everyone thinks. I just, you know, I read these publications, you guys, and when I see how it's getting publicized and they're saying, oh, in 2013, the tax rate for these people are going to be, you know, 40 some percent, that scares people. And that might not be the truth. So basically, the Medicare surtax, there's two pieces. There's the wage piece and there's the net investment income piece. If you are married filing joint, we're looking at taxing things if your income's over $250,000. If your income's under $250,000, neither of these taxes are going to apply to you. So I don't want people to get too scared about that. Folks, we're coming up at the end of the show. I didn't even get to talk about all the topic takeaways that I had, but that's okay. If you have any questions, you can always send them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, if it's still working. And if not, just give us a call next week, because we will be back. And next week, what I said I would love to talk about would be the facets of Mitt Romney's tax return. I'm dying to have somebody talk about that. There's so much stuff I see on that tax return, but I'm trying to stay away from things political, so I won't. But I will talk about dealing with multi-state issues in estate planning or inheriting, meaning you are going to inherit assets from your parents who live in New Jersey or vice versa, or you have a home in Florida. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and maybe some foreign income we'll throw in there. Jeff, thanks for being here. Andrea, thanks for being here. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.